Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn. This is Mike Montgomery, and there's a cat in my lap who is pissed off that I'm yelling. Goodbye.
Well, that kind of works out because I'm pretty sure over the coming 8 episodes, at some point, Crash is going to be rather pissed with me.
I wonder why that is.
So, basically, as of this recording, my birthday is going to be tomorrow. So, for the next, I think it's 8. I can't remember exactly how long my list was, but roughly 8 episodes. We'll be looking at essentially my history with film, for lack of a better term. The movies that have influenced my personality in some way, or I have become particularly attached to, what have you. The film we are starting with.
Yeah, if this is any indication, then this show's not gonna last much longer. Oh, Jesus Christ. And I have to wait until October to unleash my 8. And that's not fair. It's not fair. Yeah. So, yeah, you've chosen a film that, by intention and not, exists to make another film, a film that's still not very good, but another film look better in comparison. This is the budget version of a B movie, which I don't know if that makes it a C movie or a double B breast, which is what I'd probably prefer. I mean, after all, there is a Busey in this.
Yeah.
Jake Busey. But today, yeah, we have I want to say it's a special treat in the same way that, like, you know, someone would sarcastically say if a dog shit on your lawn, oh, how lovely, a little gift. Isn't that nice? This is the film that, as I said, makes Iron Sky look good. This is Nazis at the Center of the Earth.
You have no idea how deep that shaft is.
There's no other way.
Joseph Mengele, the Angel of Death, Butcher of Auschwitz.
We can help them, or we can die.
The world has no idea the juggernauts are about to be unleashed on it.
We prepare to take back our rightful place as the masters of this world.
Now, this does have a fair bit of backstory, and I wanted to start here specifically for the timing, the fact that I just thoroughly enjoy this story.
The story? Oh, you're here for the story.
Oh, not the movie story, because fuck that.
I was going to say, Jesus. This is what gets you? Okay.
No. So when the first Sharknado came out, I was live tweeting it with a bunch of friends and essentially just got addicted to live tweeting. Like, I had a blast doing it, want to do it again. So I started every Friday night, I would live tweet my way through a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
And for the extra bit of flair, this is the days when I was on Twitter as the character of Addie the Adipose. So You have a psychotic, alcoholic alien discovering B-cinema. So, I like tweeting my way through this, had a blast, and we fast forward to my 34th birthday, where I did the traditional Friday night movie. My birthday was the Saturday night. It was like, you know, I had fun. I'm going to do one more, like a little bonus event just for the hell of it. So I decided to go back and do this one again.
Yeah.
And I'm going through. I'm mocking the hell out of this movie, just having a great time. I get to the start of the final third of the film. Someone starts responding to me. And this is an individual by the name of Joseph Lawson. Uh-huh. And we're going back and forth. And I get through the credits. We're still going back and forth. And I'm kind of just having fun at the movie's expense. And then the credits end. The Netflix menu screen comes up. And I find out who Joseph Lawson is. I've just spent the last hour mocking Nazis at the Center of the Earth with the director of Nazis at the Center of the Earth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to be very clear, this is the kind of film that this is entirely 100% top to bottom, up and down. This is one of those films where it's like, oh, I see. You made a porno and then you took all the hot bits out. It sure is fascinating. There is no doubt whatsoever that this is an asylum film, and I mean that not only from the fact that they literally produced it, duh, but that kind of response from their creative team is exactly what, at least it used to be like when interacting with asylum films and discussing asylum films online. I have had that happen. I have had the creator of Sharknado in a conversation with me about stupid fucking sequel ideas to Sharknado. I remember it because it's when I came up with Volcano Nado, Sharkano, Sharkano. That was it. And it was one of those things of like, in that exact moment when I wrote it down, I knew like, okay, I'm putting this out into the world towards this person. I am not seeing a dime or any credit, and that's okay, because it's more important that I seed this idea in with Sharkano now than not. It's one of those moments where you have to see, you know, like your cultural legacy, not just the money. I don't think it happens anymore, just because like it's been 10 years since like kind of that heyday. They used to be like that. They've of course, it's not that they've moved on or grown necessarily, but you know, they're 10 years older and thus they are different kind of people now. So they just don't interact with fans in the same way, nor necessarily can they, because they're a little more known. Like they can't, it's harder for them to sneak up on someone shitting on one of their films.
They actually do to a certain extent, because I did have a similar Sharknado experience, but in my case, it was actually, I think, Sharknado 7.
Ha!
The producers were on Twitter interacting with the fans after the final movie had aired. I was literally exchanging puns with the producers of Sharknado.
And that's really cool. I can see them doing that after an event. I get the feeling they don't necessarily just go around searching for, you know, like their titles anymore. They're simply too well known and there's too much to discuss for them to be dropping in on random conversations and have it work out. That's cool, though, that they're still actively like that, at least, you know, like post showing of something. They're making sure that they don't lose any of their crowd. And to be very, 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 very clear, all asylum films are made essentially for the juvenile entertainment of the creators first, and the memeing and discussing of on Twitter and other social media accounts second. I don't think cinema really enters into it, but when you can hit your first two targets every time, I don't think it matters.
Well, I think whether or not cinema enters into it with the Asylum, I think the best way I could put it is it does, but it doesn't. Like,
this isn't about movies. It's about having fun.
Yeah. Like, it's that they're not something like Santa Jaws where it's, this is dumb fun, but you were not even trying. Asylum is, we crank these movies out as quickly as possible to glom onto an upcoming big budget release. We're low budget. We know what our niche is, and we are going to be honest about it and embrace it.
Which is hilarious, because essentially that niche is exactly dishonestly sucker baiting people who don't exactly know the name of the movie that they're supposed to be getting.
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, in my view, Asylum is to film today what someone like Roger Corman was to film back in the 80s.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Part of me wants to argue it, but the other part is just like, yeah, but come on, that makes a lot of sense. It's like, yeah, but fuck you. Like, I just don't feel that anything they make will be as much an instant classic or as well remembered as anything Corman did. And that's it, not anything Corman did. Corman did a lot of crap that would fit right in with these people. Yep, 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 yep. But oh, yeah. there's like, I have never seen The Asylum pull off the unexpectedly good film. You know, like, it's still waiting of the film that's like, what? They, how? Oh, you know, because they are artists and they're showing you that they're capable of good art. And it's like, oh, okay, what'd they do right after this? Oh, Fart 2, Fart in Space.
Well, you know what? There actually is one that I would say might pull that off, or at the very least is probably as close as The Asylum has gotten to that to date, which is, it's called American Warship, and it was their knockoff of Battleship.
No. I mean, like, they decide to make a movie. Not following in their typical thing. I mean, they sit down and are like, here's an original script, because we're capable of doing that. And it's like, it wins awards that it should never have. Like, Roger Corman could do that.
Oh, no. Like, they're never going to be... The Asylum is never going to be award-winning. That's not why they exist. Like... That's another, let's be very clear. The reason I bring up American Warship is because that was another one that I had started live tweeting through, and I got about a third into it, and I was like, this is actually half decent. There's nothing here for me to play with.
Interesting. I mean, there does come a level where the thing that you are aping may just work out all the cliches and stereotypes there is. And you're left with nothing.
Yeah.
You're left with nothing unless you go into the overt parody bag. At which point, I feel like Asylum's thesis fails. Because they always straddle the line between, as I said before, these are the filler scenes in porno. And just leading up to the cringeworthy joke that a parody making the same film would make. So, like, they never tell jokes in the same way, like, you know, the
yeah, yeah.
scary movie movies did, or Airplane, or anything like that. Like, you could see Leslie Nielsen doing any of these films at any time. You can just slot him in the same way you can slot in some porno performers easily. You just edit it in, have them wear vaguely the same clothing as the main actors. Just like super like,
yeah, yeah.
No, our actors were Uggo. So for these scenes, but yeah, they hug that exact line. So that you end up with a more serious kind of B movie thriller that also feels like it's just on the verge of being laughable and just on the verge of being kind of sexy, but in a filthy way. I mean, a really filthy way. This movie is sticky. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, like, obviously, objectively, right off the bat, no matter where this episode goes, from this point forward, let's be very clear. This movie is not good.
Yeah, no, it is not good. It is so not good that Jake Busey is... Jake Busey is not the best or worst part of it. And I mean that in any possible way. And he's really doing his best to Jake Busey the fuck out of everything. He's not, you know, we're not at Gary levels. He's not garrying his way through the film, but I think in his old age, he's simply starting to approach looking and sounding more like it. So he's relatively restrained, relatively. But you see a Busey face and your brain fills in the rest.
It's like there is one point toward the final act of the movie where Busey's character, Dr. Adrian Reichstad, whose
name changes depending on who's pronouncing it.
Yeah. There's what you see his lip kind of pull back, the teeth come out. And for a brief stretch there, that man is making Papa Gary proud.
Yes, they all look like xenomorphs.
But in terms of the plot for this thing, we have a team of Antarctic researchers who and I think this moment is the first point where if you haven't figured out what you're in for by now, they discover a Nazi plane that's buried about 6 inches under the snow.
How they
meant to miss this when they start drilling.
I mean, you know how it is. You're flirting horribly with your coworker, and you miss the Nazi warplane buried in the Antarctic ice. Yeah, it happens. Duh.
I mean, as much as I would say that Dominique Swain is at least decent over the course of the movie, Act One, nobody is giving a good performance.
I didn't know he had a name.
I say nobody, but Christopher Carl Johnson's Dr. Mengele, maybe?
Yeah, that's a performance, all right. It so much of this is like local theater school levels. Like some of those accents are they're coming out of Nazis, but they'd be offensive even to Germans. Like, God damn, I've heard more authentic German accents on Hogan's Heroes.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, no, I can believe it. Like, a number of... I don't know if I would say this about Johnson's accent, but every other German actor as soon as they start talking, it is that Hogan's Heroes stereotypical accent. It's like, you were born in Montana, weren't you?
Yeah. And insofar as Mangala himself, while he's, you know, what, a scenery chewing evil villain, he's fucking Joseph Mangala. Fucking Joseph Mangala. There's something about him that is just so, like, not committed. He's doing a cliche and a stereotype, and he's almost there, but he's not
yeah.
crazy enough, nor is he, does he have the gravitas enough. Like, it's not Mengele in The Boys from Brazil level of, like, restrained, but also scary as fuck. And it's not the crazy bastard from Human Centipede, who is Mangala cranked up to cackling weirdo. The best way to describe this is if they sold at Spirit Halloween a Dr. Joseph Mangala costume, this would be the costume. There's something about it that is so commercialized of this evil bastard to the point that it's like, it's practically a Saturday morning cartoon version of Dr. Mangala. It has more to do with the master than the actual fucking Nazi doctor.
I think with Mangala, you can either go crazy bastard or analytical detachment. And here he's going more analytical detachment.
Analytical bastard.
Yeah. Like, it's that, does he get there? It's either too detached or not enough, depending on your point of view.
Yeah. And it just, like, it's not that it doesn't work in this film. It works because it's a B-movie, but it's just,
yeah,
the whole time you're like, shit or get off the pot. I cackle a little bit. Go all in. Have a full speech. And I think, spoiler for Nazis at the center of the earth, spoiler for Nazis at the center of the earth, Hitler shows up at the end. And I think that that was a mistake. We'll get into that later. I think that that was a mistake because it completely undermines Mangala when they should have leaned into Mangala far more.
Yeah, I can see that. If any other movie, I would completely agree. Here, where you're going lower budget, so you want to lean into the ridiculous as much as you can get away with. What they do with Hitler here,
it's Wolfenstein. Hey kids, you ever play Wolfenstein? And no, I don't mean the Bethesda one. I mean, hey kids, have you ever used DOS before? What's up, 80s children? The ending of this movie is Wolfenstein. That's it. It's the last level of Wolfenstein.
Oh, it's not only the end. The final action sequences of this movie is one giant extended Nerf gun fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very strange one with fantastic assets that I think they pulled out of a free library.
And especially how, okay, now we've all heard the jokes about the stormtroopers in Star Wars and how grossly inaccurate they are.
Mm-hmm.
Here they don't even try to hide the fact that the Nazis are basically shooting around our heroes the entire time.
Meanwhile, again, heroes, crack shots, scientists in Antarctica, fantastic shots, Nazi stormtroopers, crap.
No Nazi in this movie has been a remotely accurate shot since the opening of the film, when Joseph Mengele is suddenly the greatest sharpshooter in all of Nazi Germany, because he is headshotting American soldiers with a pistol while running toward a plane.
Yeah, no, it's this film goes through so many bad cliches in the laziest, weirdest way of like, yeah, the Nazis aren't actually threats. They torture and kill people, and it's really bad after that initial setup. But the average stormtrooper is not much of a threat, aside from they're all rapists. We'll get into that in a bit.
Oh yeah,
but it's really weird how it can't make up its mind. And like as we say, somehow Hitler returned, which is again the third act of this film. It is exactly the same as not The Last Skywalker. Fucking hell, I hate that movie so much I've forgotten the name of a Star Wars film. That is incredible.
Rise of Skywalker gives you nothing more than the line, somehow Palpatine returned.
Yeah
here they give you a steampunk air fryer.
Oh yeah, and we get our steampunk air fryer Hitler, but more importantly, they have inexplicably under the ice built an entire army. They only have a few, like they admit we only have a handful of men left, but they have like entire legions of tanks and fighter jets and everything. It's like, where the fuck did they? Somehow Palpatine returned. It's the same fucking ending as Rise of Skywalker, but somehow manages to do it better, only because they don't have the money to needlessly fill the sky with every extended character you could think of. They don't have enough of a budget for more than like six characters to start with. They start dropping actors as fast as fucking possible. And they have to pay for a Hitler near the end. And, you know, that shit gets expensive.
Well, the nice thing there is the budget clearly does not go into the wardrobe, because I don't know if you noticed, but the Nazi armbands. Give me a swath of red material, some white felt, some black felt. And from this movie, I can make you screen accurate Nazi armbands in less than 10 minutes.
A service that I'm sure you advertise.
To absolutely no one.
But yeah, like, this is one of those weird things. These are the shoddiest looking Nazis I've ever seen.
Like, there would be spots, and I'm also fascinated how I'm pretty sure that the word Nazi is only said once the entire movie.
Yeah, only a couple of times.
But it's by Dominique Swain in what may have been my favorite line in the whole damn thing. Come on, you bobble-headed zombie Nazi son of a bitch.
That is a good one. That's definitely their favorite line that would have been in the trailer, I am sure. It also gets said by the Australian plane crew, who, upon being asked if it is friendly or not, shout, it's covered in Nazi swastikas.
Target's covered in Nazi swastikas. I'd say it's hostile.
Yeah. And
those are literally the only two quotes on IMDb.
Oh, fantastic. But again, truly breathtaking accent work there. Their Australian accents are almost as good as their German, you know?
Before we offend our Australian listeners, if we actually have any,
yeah, we do.
It is referenced that the plane would have come from Auckland, so they're New Zealanders.
Then it's even worse.
Exactly,
they're doing Australian accents. Like, I'm sorry, no. If you want to do a New Zealand accent, no offense to New Zealanders, then you put on your fucking Flight of the Conchords and you go out there and like that would have been great. It's covered in Nazi swastikas. You know, you can up pitch, you motherfuckers. Australians are down, New Zealanders are up.
But also with that plane specifically. Now this is, I believe, a meteorological survey plane that is equipped with Hellfire missiles, because fuck you.
Yes. Oh, delightfully, isn't it?
Yeah.
There was definitely a moment where, I took a good long second. I paused when it fired the missiles, trying to figure out where they're from. And they're from about 5 feet under the wing. They appear and they move, and they appear and they move. And by missile, I'm pretty sure that it is just a CGI tube with a solid end. That's it. Aerodynamic. They all got shot down. That's impossible. No, it's really quite easy. Your missiles were fucking tubes. Tubes!
But... Now... I mean, look, let's be honest. If you ever watched Airwolf and you remember the quote unquote CG missiles that Airwolf would fire, this is the same thing done in 2012. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But also, with those pilots, I would like to take a moment to go back to our review of Plane, where we praised the professionalism in the dialogue in those cockpit scenes. Now, if you want to witness the complete antithesis of what they did in Plane, oh, we got a movie for you.
Yeah, they're allowed to have outright American jockey boys in this film, and they... they spent a day writing that page.
Oh, a day? Couple hours?
Bar tab.
I mean, again, it's an asylum film, so if you're trying to figure out how long they took to write anything, whatever your fastest guess is, that's the one you go with.
Yeah. And to be clear, these characters appear on screen fighting a flying Nazi saucer that it looks more like a sombrero. Like, that's a that's a chubby saucer. It's a chubby saucer. Saucers usually ain't that chubby. Maybe it's just like a flying Nazi nipple.
It's a Nazi nipple with an opening weapon attack of an EMP that can apparently also shut down the mechanical, non-electrical parts of a plane.
Yeah, that question actually led me down a Google hole where I learned that the... the atomic weapon used on Hiroshima did not have enough strength to set off an EM field, nor did any other plane drop weapon that has apparently been done with a prop plane. And so the answer does not exist that the internet can tell me if a prop plane's hydraulics, which again is hydraulics, not an electrical system, it's fucking hydraulics, would seize inexplicably due to an EM pulse. I had the exact same thought, and like pretty much like the entire film, I had to pause it and go like, nope,
yeah.
I need to know. I need to know if the mechanical systems. I can understand if the radio goes out, radar goes out, any of that fucking shit. Sure, 100%. You are pulling on a goddamn mechanical fucking lever. What about it? I knew the minute I saw it, that would be the thing that truly breaks this movie. There's a lot of fucking stupid in this film. And you're allowed a lot of fucking stupid when you start playing with, like, Nazis at the center of the earth. But, you know, you're starting with Hollow Earth and just going deeper and deeper and worse and worse. But for some reason, a line that they didn't even need to have to say in there. Just come up with some other bullshit. A line about the hydraulics pissed me off and completely broke any sense of the magic, of the illusion.
Well, I think that's one of those... It almost depends on your mentality going into the movie, because I know for me, at one point, if I remember right, it's established that they're actually about 5 miles down.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, center of the earth, you're only 5 miles underground. It's like, all right, well, if we're going for this kind of stupid, I'm in.
I mean, I'm pretty sure even Journey to the Center of the Earth doesn't actually take place at the center of the Earth, but 5 miles is so weak sauce. Now, not to say that there aren't other moments that will take you out. There's a couple of scenes that actually verge on outright offensiveness. And they occur like in the middle of this film, and they're stupid leading up, and immediately after they introduce Robo Hitler. So it's stupid afterwards. But in the very middle are two scenes that are like, what the fuck? Would you switch directors for the day and the other guy's really into fucking sallow? Where did that come from? Because there's a Holocaust gas chamber rape scene.
Yes.
Content warning. Followed immediately by a forced abortion to harvest stem cells to rejuvenate the head of Adolf Hitler. And it's like, what the fuck happened in the middle of this movie that it went from a fun, stupid film to a problematic, stupid film, and then immediately pivots right back to like fun, stupid, and hopes that, hey, maybe you forget that. What the fuck? It's like it's like those scenes are from an earlier, way darker version of the script.
Oh yeah, no, the shower scene. I would completely agree with you. Like, even I, as much as I love terrible films, and this does have a special place in my heart, even I am going, yeah, this shower scene probably should not be here.
Yeah, it, like, I get it. It's committing to like a bunch of aspects of the horror and terror of Nazis and all of that, but you have not commented on any of that leading up to it, and you have not commented on any of it afterwards. This is a film starring Jake Busey that has the head of Hitler riding a robot. It's almost more offensive to include that shit, because it's just like it. And the reason why it is they're filmed luridly. They're not filmed straight on to make the offensiveness of the actions that of you know, and the fact that Nazis did this kind of fucking shit every day, literally to millions of people. There's something about it that it's shot like it's shot the exact same way as it was previously, in that at any minute this is going to break into a porno, and suddenly you're watching Nazi porn for some fucking reason. You know, and then it's immediately followed by like body horror. And it's like, what the fuck? It's so bizarre. And if it was chopped out, the film would not necessarily. It's weird because it's a pivotal fucking two scenes. It's literally like the pivot point of the fucking film. And it descends. It just goes dark and deep, and then immediately rockets out of it like it has some sort of fucking like whips the slingshot gravity launch. I've never seen anything like it in film.
Oh yeah, the shower scene, it feels kind of like you're doing a film with Nazis, so this is supposed to be here because it's Nazis. But it doesn't work because that's the only purpose that the scene seems to be trying to serve.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, it's like if you're watching The Three Stooges and then at some point they just sexually assault a woman and like, and then the fucking short just keeps going, and you're like, "What the fuck just happened?" It's weird. It's jarring.
The rest of the film
before it and after have a completely different taste. And it's almost one of those things of I understand why immediately after they introduce the head of Adolf Hitler riding a robot body. A la Nixon in Futurama, because it's the only way that you could possibly have exited that like trajectory and still maintain the audience for this movie very specifically.
Frankly, yeah, and the forced abortion is, it's to me, it's not just what the fuck?
Yeah.
There are almost like multiple layers of expressions involving the word fuck that you could put on this entire sequence.
Yeah. No, there's a fuck ton of what the fuck is happening. And yeah, like, just weird. Just weird. And it's filmed like it's in an episode of Degrassi. Like the original Degrassi?
Yeah.
It's weird. It goes weird. And then immediately right back to usual stupid shit. I don't know.
It's like, so we find out that they're trying to use stem cells to revive Hitler. The first attempt fails because these stem cells were from a corpse. Because They can't do anything without killing a main character first.
Mm-hmm.
That attempt fails. And at this point, we plot conveniently find out that Jake Busey's girlfriend is pregnant. And the way Busey plays the scene is that it's the standard, oh my God, why didn't you tell me? And then he has this moment of, oh, wait, I need, you can see on his face this, oh, wait, I need fresh stem cells and you're pregnant.
Yeah. Jake Busey acts, which is worth the price of admission.
And at that point as the viewer, it's, oh, fuck.
Yeah, now, and you assume, like, okay, I just went through a scene, so surely they're not gonna, no, they go pretty, I mean, you know, it could be worse. Could have been a lot better.
And we cut to her in the stirrups, and it's the what the fuck that any sane audience member would have in reaction.
Yeah.
And then Jake Busey comes into the shot with a vacuum cleaner. So now you're also trying to have the cartoonish comedic. What the fuck?
Yeah, and
you want to laugh, but you can't.
Yeah, because it is really just like, just what the fuck is happening in this film? Like, it goes from just like comedic silly to trying to offend you, but then it immediately backtracks and pretends that never happened. It's like, what the fuck is happening? I feel like this film gaslit me a few times.
I mean, frankly, I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Because it has a typical ending, you know, like the bad guys are defeated. You know, Mengele is revealed to be a truly horrific looking monster by the end, and he wants to wear a guy's skin because he is beautiful. I understand that. Hitler gets injected with the Nazi killing formula and knocked into the waters under Antarctica. And again, Antarctica is a continent. Anyway, he gets knocked into the water and sinks down to the bottom, presumably where he is just frozen or something. Like, it has a stupid action film ending. You know, it does. They blow what little they have left on the budget on the ship crashing. It's fantastic. And oh my God, when they would cut between a scene or a shot even where there's actual actors and there's the Hitler head, and then they go to like a bit further back and the actor has to be on screen with the Hitler head and robot, and suddenly it's like, oh, I love PS2. Oh, such great cutscenes. It's very jarring, but Hitler literally changes appearance between shots, and so it becomes quite entertaining just keeping track of that.
Not only does Hitler change appearance, and I would like to note that James Maxwell's Adolf Hitler looks like a mildly confused dad for about 98% of his scenes.
Yeah, that is the most, like, dinner theater Hitler I have ever seen.
But, you know, number one, not only is there his constantly changing appearance, but I was praying that you were going to mention the moment when they have to show Robo Hitler, which, the jokes that you can get just out of a Transformer Hitler. But I was hoping you were going to specifically reference the scene where they have to show him picking up Dominic Swain's character, and for budget's sake, she can't move or emote in any way
at all, because she's essentially just the entire Photoshop time. Cutout. Yeah.
Yep.
It's incredible. Like, I was expecting one last twist. This is the kind of film that had me expecting like his head on a rocket or something. And I didn't get that. It did that thing that really cheap, cheesy B movies do, where they end exactly when the story's over, instead of having a little bit of a denouement. And, or, you know, it's like cut to black, we're done. Not even like the slow fade out. And it's just, you should have at least, like, if you're making schlock and over the fade out, we don't hear Ming the Merciless, what are you doing with your life?
Oh, you know, And there definitely would have been a better way to do that instead of the cutting to credits with a song that has nothing to do with anything whatsoever.
Not only has nothing to do with anything whatsoever, felt 10 years out of place 10 years ago. Like, why is there cheap, like rip-off Nickelback playing suddenly? What does this have to do with anything?
I honestly do believe that with Asylum, if it's an A movie like Sharknado, that they will pay to get a theme song of some sort done. If it's an Asylum B-level movie, which this 1,000% is, they will just pick some random track out of the library of stuff that they already own or like have access to or what have you.
Yeah. And whoever makes that choice has zero sense of theme whatsoever.
Oh, I honestly fully expect that somewhere in an office at Asylum Studios, there's a room that has like a big wheel on the wall, and on each section of the wheel is a different song title, and they just spun the wheel, and whatever it landed on, that's what they put on the end credits.
I would be satisfied with that. That would be acceptable. And that would make more sense than someone hearing that song and going, you know what, that needs to be at the end of a film called Nazis at the Center of the Earth. That screams to me, Nazis at the Center of the Earth.
Yeah. And then at the very end, after the credits finish, it's only about 3 seconds long.
I'll admit I bailed. No. The second I real, oh, movie's done. Fuck on off.
This film has the just sweet nerve to give one last big ol' fuck you to common sense by doing a stinger.
What was that stinger?
You cut to a Terminator 2-esque Hitler buried at the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's his robotic hand sticking out from the bottom, and it starts to move to indicate that he's actually still alive.
Okay, I was expecting that.
Yeah.
I was expecting that before. See, I guess I was expecting a Michael Bay James Cameron stinger where it's, you know, like the hero and the heroine are sitting there next to the burning wreckage, and the music crescendos, and the camera pans up to the sky, and it fades out, and then it fades into like the murkiness, and it comes down and dun 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 dun, then smash cut to credits. I assumed that since they did the cheap ass ending, there would be no post credit. Foolish I forgot that this came out in 2012 when every dumb bastard was like, Marvel's doing it. We have to do it. Then we'll make the money. And they never made the money.
No. And I mean, frankly, you bring up Michael Bay, and there's been a trend predominantly on TikTok where people like to go, What if such and such movie was made in 2007, and where all it is the scene ends and it smash cuts to the end credits from the first Transformers movie, essentially just to work in Linkin Park's What I've Done. And I'm sorry, the end of this movie is perfect for that.
It really is. It's very like, actually, not only that, but also take Optimus Prime's stupid fucking monologue at the end of it and just put it over the last couple of scenes of this, mute the dialogue and just have Optimus Prime talking about, like, but we will stay here and make sure that the humans are alive. Fuck, this is a stupid film.
They could do it. They could do that exact ending and cross over Nazis at the center of the Earth with Transmorphers.
Oh Jesus! They should have. They should have thought that far ahead and just like have this whole story be narrated by whoever the fuck is the Optimus Prime of the Transmorphers, and have it fade out and he's telling that story to the main character, whoever the budget Sam Witwicky is, and it's just like, that's a really stupid story. Why would you tell me that? What was the point of that? Why are we even? And it just hard cuts to black and nothing, and that's the end of the movie. It's just budget Sam Witwicky being like, what the fuck? Why'd you just waste 2 hours of my time? You called me here. Was that it?
Okay, well, I want Dominic Swain to be budget Sam Witwicky, because for some reason in Asylum films, she's kind of enjoyable. I don't know why.
Yeah, because it's the only time you see her. Oh!
But in The Fast and the Fierce, another Asylum film she did where she's the villain.
Good lord. There's that's I mean, there are titles that are stepping up and like they're picking fights. Fast and the Furious, I feel like you're sucker punching me, and this is how you get in a fucking drag out brawl with Vin Diesel.
There's a scene in the first Fast and Furious where
first.
There's a sequel.
Fuck off.
There's a DMX led sequel.
Oh, X. Why? X. Oh, X. Why? You're gonna make me lose my mind.
But she has kidnapped this, computer hacker, and they're having this exchange in, I believe, essentially an abandoned office.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, she has no dialogue. Like, the way that the scene plays out, you would honest to God swear that Dominique was being paid per line, and the budget had already run out. So they had to reshoot her segment of this scene, but take all of her dialogue out, where she can only respond to this guy by emoting.
I don't like, there was some really fucking bad moments in this film of like, I'm pretty sure Jake Busey just like broke into a few scenes and like, you can tell the other actors don't know what to say and he's just doing whatever comes into his Busey mind. That actually trumps all of them. And that's incredible because, oh my God, this film's bad. That sounds worse.
Oh no, that scene is 100% worse. No mistake.
Oh my God. But I guess watch this movie if you have to. If someone makes you for a show that you're doing.
let me be very clear. Asylum films are best watched in one scenario and one scenario only. That's where you get a bunch of your friends over for a party and there's a whole lot of alcohol flowing and you want to put something on just to have a good time.
That is a much better answer than mine was, which was during a hostage taking. You know, PSYOPs.
Like, it, my scenario requires a film that has no substance to it whatsoever.
Well, I'm sorry for reading the playbook from Waco.
And I mean, okay, yes, there are moments, like for instance, when our team of scientists realizes that they've been kidnapped by Nazis. One of these scientists is Jewish and reacts to this revelation that their captors are Nazis in a way that immediately gives away that he's Jewish. And the actor does at least do a decent job of performing that instant, I fucked up.
Yeah, and which is, of course, why they immediately kill the actor's character off.
Yeah.
Because it was proven in that moment that they are capable of giving a performance. So you gotta get the fuck out of the film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And I also loved how I specifically mentioned that the entire final action sequence is one giant Nerf gun fight because everyone is wielding the Raider, the Maverick, and the Deploy from Nerf's first end strike line. And yes, I recognize them on sight.
Oh my god. I was wondering what they were from because they're obviously not guns, but
yeah.
Oh, how adorable.
Oh, make no. And I used to own each of them. And this is not the first, this is not the only Asylum film to use the Maverick. There's I can't remember the name of it, but the basic plot was essentially lycanthropy as plague. But in that one, the Mavericks at least show up as tranquilizer dart guns.
Mm-hmm. Instead of half-assed laser cannons.
Yep.
You gotta love when you've got Nazis capable of building personal laser cannons, but I can't seem to make them for their fucking flying UFO ship thing, which still fires just bullets.
Oh no! They did make one laser cannon for the flying saucer.
This is true.
It's simply it only points straight up.
Yeah, it's not a good one. It's not smart. It's not well designed. But they're Nazis.
But with the Nerf guns, but with the Nerf gun props, there is as much as I hate to throw the prop department for this movie under the bus, I'm still gonna do it. Because there is one moment now. The original Nerf Maverick was predominantly yellow bodied with black trim, and gray slide. And there is one scene where the gun that's gets knocked away from our heroes, and Dominic Swain dives to try to retrieve it because it slid under a shelf or something. They make the mistake at this point of going to a close-up on the gun itself, and the yellow on the original, on the handle of the gun is clearly visible underneath the paint.
I can't believe that the Asylum's Nazis at the center of the earth would make such a glaring prop continuity error. How dare it? Is there any quality control on this film?
Like, is that adorable? Wow, you even missed that.
At that point, did they even care to begin with? Well, considering that that was the first of eight, the Octagonon, what the fuck do you have lined up for me next?
I can tell you, first of all, what did not make the list. It almost did. With the premiere of Star Trek Picard coming up.
Yeah.
And the fact that I have said before at some point I was going to make you do this.
Uh-huh.
I almost put Star Trek V on the list. And then I was like, wait, shit, no, that won't quite work because we've also got Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania coming up.
Alas, yes.
And then I went, no, timing-wise, I might still need something before that. So, depending on how things go release schedule-wise, our next movie is going to be either Quantumania,
mm-hmm.
or my actual first exposure to Star Trek and possibly mainstream science fiction in general, Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home.
Oh, thank God.
It honestly came down to me going, I want to do 5, but for the general theme, 4 makes way more sense.
See, oddly enough, I was kind of scared you were going to say Generations, and I'd be like, fuck!
I would have considered it, because I think Generations actually was the first film that I went to twice. But it's also a very bland Star Trek movie.
Exactly. It's such a nothing film. It's just, Voyage Home. There's a snack. That's a good film. Awesome. Well, either way, I'm going to be happy.
Oh, no doubt. And yeah, make no mistake, there are other films on the list where she's going to hate me. But they're not for a little while yet.
Yay! Salvation! See? Decorum. It's possible. It's possible.
Or I'm just really evil and like to string the torture over long periods of time.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. But until then, if you have any questions, concerns, or you also want to bitch about Nazis at the center of the world, Earth, Nazis at the center of the Earth, you can contact us. You could. It's a suggestion.
If you would want to reach us with film suggestions that may save Crash's sanity, we can be reached at realgeekshfx@gmail.com, on Twitter at realgeekshfx. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Hive at the Maritime Lord. If you want to question me directly about why in the name of God I would support Asylum Studios, you can do that by emailing me at themaritimelord@gmail.com.
And I can be found at Friday in Halifax on Twitter and Crash and Burn everywhere else. Somehow Adolf Hitler returned.
With the Allspark gone, we cannot return life to our planet. And fate has yielded its reward. A new world to call home. We live among its people now, hiding in plain sight, but watching over them in secret, waiting, protecting. I have witnessed their capacity for courage. And though we are worlds apart, like us, there's more to them than meets the eye. I am Optimus Prime, And I send this message to any surviving Autobots taking refuge among the stars. We are here. We are waiting.